We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Fay. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. And Jack, sadly, we are talking about a Nets loss to OKC, 107-121. How are we feeling?
Pretty disastrous second half, Nick.
Yeah, really bad third quarter. And this is a game the Nets led by 16 in the second. We're going to jump to that in plenty more. Make sure you check the Buzz on all streaming platforms. Also, give us a follow on Instagram at Brooklyn Buzz Pod. But Jack, where do you want to start?
Nick, I want to start with that third quarter. What the heck went wrong?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of things went wrong, and a couple things went really right for OKC. You know, Lou Dort, I think, hit 5 threes in that quarter. That's something that's not typically going to happen. He's a guy that shoots 33% from deep, but the Nets never really adjusted when he did get hot. Offensive rebounding for OKC was a big factor in that quarter as well. Nets got stagnant. They couldn't hit shots, turning over the basketball, and OKC just started to really feed into the Nets' mistakes.
Yeah, I think at one point, Nick, like Lou Dort had 6 threes in the third quarter or something like that. He started off with 3, then he had 5, and then I messaged you. I'm like, yeah, he's got 6 now, Jack. I'm like, Jesus, Mary and Joseph. And, you know, he's a Nets killer because I think, this is from Doug Norrie of Locked On Nets, said that Lou Dort has been 20 of 33, 61% from 3, his last 3 seasons against the Nets. That's like prime Steph Curry, Joe Harris numbers.
Yeah, I mean, it is really good. Obviously, the Nets gave him completely wide open looks, and that was something they were game planning to do, and he made them pay. And sometimes that's going to happen. Even with that said, the Nets still had plenty of opportunities to win this game or give themselves a real shot at the end, and a lot of it was just mistakes and stagnant offense and not getting Mikal Bridges enough touches, and also I think not doing a good enough job of, you know, getting shots in the paint and settling for sometimes just out of rhythm threes.
Yeah, look, that third quarter, just piggybacking off you a little bit, at one point the Nets were 3 of 14, 21% in the third quarter. I'm not sure if that was overall in the latter points of it, but OKC were 14 of 29. Now, 48% isn't world-beating, but 15 extra shooting possessions is the reason why the Nets scored 20 points and the OKC Thunder scored 38.
Yeah, and the Nets in this game did a really nice job, I thought, of protecting the ball in the first half other than some careless turnovers, but then they finished with 17, you know, and a lot of that was just allowing a young OKC team to get out and run and get easy buckets and allow them to utilize their athleticism. And as I mentioned, they also did a great job on the boards. They were just really the more energetic and athletic team. I think you started to see maybe a bit of it being the last game on the road trip, and maybe Vaughn should have looked to go into some of the bench guys a little bit more, or, you know, throw somebody out there that's juiced up like a Sumner or a Watanabe.
Yeah, I think that a bit of creativity there could have helped. Not sure it would have changed the result, because you look at the first half, Nick, and things were incredible. The Nets had 11 assists on 12 made field goals in the first quarter, 20 of 22 in the first half. So 20 assists on 20 made on 22 made field goals, only finished the game with 25. So that reflects the stagnant nature that you're alluding to. They shot 10 of 26 from 3 in the first half. They finished 12 of 41. That means they went 2 of 15 in the second half. That's
And some of that, too, is guys just missing shots. You know, some of them were good looks, and it's just not execution. And as we've talked about, the variance of an offense dependent on three ball is going to have nights like this, especially, you know, when you have somebody like Dorian Finney-Smith in the last game was able to hit some big threes tonight, 1 of 6, and felt like he couldn't hit anything. Even Mikal Bridges, you know, 3 of 10, which is an off night for him.
Yeah, some of the, like, he could have hit one or two corner threes. He might have got hit on one of them as well. I think that to me is an aberration. You know, Dorian Finney-Smith is streaky, you know, and yep. He's Royce O'Neal-like in his streakiness. So, you know, the three-point shooting is going to be a key indicator of how the Nets do go overall. You know, most games that they shoot the ball well, that might win them. But in saying that, Nick...
And shooting the ball well might actually cover up some other mistakes.
Exactly. You know, good shooting, good offense overrides poor, porous defense. And I think the defense did get a little bit sloppier. And I think offensively is where we saw a lot of the issues, as a lot of the stats did reflect. But who did you want to start with, Nick? You know, obviously, I think Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson, the twins, were great tonight. But a part of me wants to have a bit of a Spencer Dinwiddie conversation.
Yeah, I just want to say one more note on OKC. It felt like they were turning over the ball in the first half, and that second half they did a really good job of not doing that. But also it felt like the Nets were making life too easy. It just felt like there was string of possessions where they were just getting in the paint and getting shots that they really wanted to. And also you saw the Nets have really bad miscommunications on some pick and roll plays and on some dribble handoffs. And it's just like those things are going to lead to losses against pretty good teams. You know, OKC is contending for a play-in spot right now, and that's what they're trying to do. But let's jump into Spence.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
So Spencer Dinwiddie, 39 minutes for him tonight, 5 of 16 from the field, didn't hit a 3, 0 of 4 from there, 6 of 6 from the free throw line, did have 6 boards, one of them offensive, 11 assists, 2 steals, 6 turnovers to go with his 16 points, Nick. How would you surmise Spencer Dinwiddie against OKC?
Yeah, I thought he was good in the first half. I think he had 9 of his 11 assists in the first half.
I believe that's right. Yep.
Yeah, he was probably like 9 or 10 points in the first half, was getting downhill, had some really nice drives. There was like a spin move one in there, and he was just running the show, and he was really in control. And it just felt like in that second half, things got stagnant. He didn't get a couple calls, started getting frustrated, kind of played a little bit emotional, and we saw the result. And that obviously hurt the team substantially, given they need him to play well because of the role they're asking him to play.
Yeah, the roller coaster of emotions that you experience in a 48-minute basketball game, I can only imagine at NBA level, you know, playing pickup ball, I experience all of them. But there has to be an emotional sort of stability and tenor to it, especially from Spencer Dinwiddie as, quote-unquote, one of the team leaders. He got the ball in his hands a lot. And one thing stuck out to me, Nick, I'm not sure if you saw it. at about 100-109. You know, the Nets are on the way back. There's a few little possessions that they're building some slight momentum. And Spence throws a lob to Nick Claxton, and it's slightly off. And he sort of does a little bit of like a stamp his feet, like sort of like a mini tantrum. And I'm just like, my guy, get back in transition. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander got an easy layup, you know, to extend the lead back to double digits. One, I think that the pass was poor, and his lob passing to centers is something that can certainly improve for Spencer Dinwiddie. And to me, that attitude there, I might tweet out the video tomorrow. It left me with a slightly bitter taste in my mouth. Now, Spencer has been great. His playmaking has been pretty bloody positive, but that was just a little moment that stuck out to me. I'm not sure if you noticed it, Nick.
Yeah, he definitely was. And I think there was more than just that possession. And I think it became a point was, I don't know if he was upset with Clax or he's more so upset with his own play because he was making other mistakes and seemed really frustrated. Then there was, you know, a later point in that fourth quarter where he ended up like walking to half court and yelling, you know, just to kind of relieve some of his anger. Sometimes it's just one of those games. And this is also what's going to happen sometimes when you're asking a player of Spencer Dinwiddie's caliber to play in such a hard role. You know, we've talked about on the last podcast, like this is a role that's for a top 10 player. And obviously Spencer Dinwiddie at times has been fringe all-star, but he's not a top 10 guy. And I think that's also why fans can sometimes get so frustrated that they're not, you know, including Mikal Bridges more and not giving him a bigger chunk of the offense, especially in a night where it felt like he looked comfortable getting to his spots in that mid range and started to really find a rhythm. Yeah, he wasn't knocking down his three ball at a great rate, but he was also getting to the free throw line a lot in that third quarter, which helped kind of slow down that run to an extent.
Yeah, it's interesting. It seemed like there was a changing trend at like 97-102. Mikal gets to run a pick and roll and he hits a mid-ranger and it's money. And then like a couple of possessions later, his defense is incredible on SGA to force the turnover. I think I might tweet out both of those videos at some point before the next game. But it just seems to me, like I've said, derelict in their duty for Sean Marks, for Steve Nash. I might have to say it for Spencer and Jacques now. Put the ball in Mikal Bridges' hands. I tweeted out the other day, you know, I'm not like trying to hype my own Twitter. I'm trying to hype this stat. Spencer Dinwiddie averages 73 touches per game. Royce O'Neal averages 61 touches per game. Mikal Bridges averages 50 touches per game as a Brooklyn Net. Like, I get Spencer Dinwiddie should probably have the ball a lot more. He's got a tighter dribble. He's a better playmaker. But that number for Mikal Bridges needs to grow. And in fourth quarters, like, it's just, you know who your best player is. It just seems to me like idiotic to play through other people and go, you know what, let's just leave our best player in the corner. Like, are you going to do that with Kevin Durant? Like, no.
Yeah, I think even you saw at points in this game where Cam Johnson was getting more opportunities to handle the basketball a little bit and run the show. And not to say he did a bad job, but it's like, you know, Mikal did have 34 points and shot 47% from the field. And like I mentioned, was getting to the free throw line. And as many pointed out, and another thing Justin and I actually talked about on the Timberwolves recap was not attacking a player when he's in foul trouble. You know, SGA gets in foul trouble, the Nets never really go back at him. And obviously he's improved a little bit defensively, but he's still a guy that will be, you know, get caught with his hands in the cookie jar, you know, trying to get some of those steals and be a little handsy. And it felt like that was an issue for them too, because obviously SGA was such a huge part of what OKC was doing offensively.
Yeah, and Mikal Bridges, I thought his defense on him for 90% of the time. That's the one thing that I'm just sort of nearly gobsmacked at, that he can be that elite defensively. And look, maybe it's a ploy by Jacques Vaughn to let him, you know, have a bit of rest on offense, but he's an incredible two-way player. He's borderline star status. You know, I know, I think you might have tweeted out, you know, where is he? Is he top 20? Is he top 30? Is he top 15? Like, this guy has all NBA potential, and you alluded to it tonight, 34 points, Nick. Like, he's dropping 25-30, and it's light work for him. We could be getting 40-point performances consistently from Mikal Bridges if the coaching staff utilized him more, and if Spencer just, like, got rid of the ball and didn't stop dribbling and, you know, just alleviate his own pressure.
Yeah, I think there's definitely could have been more opportunities for, you know, Mikal Bridges to have 28 shots tonight. I don't think that's, you know, anything negative, just given where the Nets are and what he's shown he's capable of doing. And I think sometimes you need someone to carry you, especially when Dinwiddie's just having a bad night. Like, he just wasn't hitting his shots. He wasn't hitting, you know, obviously his 2-point attempts, his 3-point attempts, wasn't getting the calls. You know, this is a night where maybe you lean into Mikal a little bit more and let him kind of showcase he is a star.
And the thing is, he's like a 50-40-90 guy as a net. Like, these are obviously probably unsustainable numbers. But for this point, ride the bloody hot hand. And you alluded to it, Nick. He's getting to the free throw line, and it's a number that I just keep looking at. And he's doing it 9 or 10 times a game easily. And he's improving that craft there. You know, I think Spencer Dinwiddie is a better driver, and the numbers do reflect that. He's one of the best in the league in terms of volume and efficiency. But Mikal Bridges has better three-level scoring. He's got the pull-up three that's a number, I think it's 45% or something outrageous like that. His mid-range game is smooth as hell. He's understanding mismatches. I think that the best way for the Nets to keep winning going forward is to keep utilizing Mikal Bridges and use Spencer Dinwiddie as a sort of secondary sort of guy. Yep. Put the ball in Spencer's hands, but you like that sort of first half stuff where it was Cam and Mikal like combining for 31 points or something outrageous like that. So, look, I still think Spencer Dinwiddie's having a positive effect on the team, but I think he's being asked to do too much. He's being stretched beyond his own limits, as you alluded to as well, Nick.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. I think it's going to need some more creativity, the offense. And I think when the Nets start leaning to Mikal as, you know, being that number one option even more, it's going to allow them to open up other things in the offense because defenses are eventually going to adjust. You know, they're going to give him more attention, and now shots are going to be easier for a guy like Cam Johnson or Royce O'Neal or Joe Harris or Seth Curry when they're on the floor.
Do you think that this loss, Nick, is going to have, I'll say, profound impact on the Nets chasing that 4 or 5 seed?
I think any game at this point of the season matters, you know, substantially. And this is one that you know, feel like you should have had because you're up 16, you know. There's going to be games where you're up 2 and you feel like you should have had them, but this is one where you were riding pretty well in that first half. OKC came out with a good punch in the third, and you never really were able to kind of hold back on. And, you know, credit them for playing well. And I think this is just one of those games where the Nets didn't play well, and you can look at a lot of guys on the team and just like a lack of execution in multiple aspects, one being just making shots, but also, you know, offensive rebounding for OKC was a big part of this and taking care of the basketball.
Nick, outside of Cam and Mikal, who do you think was the Nets' third best player tonight?
I think Klax was still able to have an impact, even though Hakka Klax still was negative to an extent. But, you know, Klax finished with 12 points, 4-7 from the field, 4-9 from the free throw line, 12 rebounds, 4 offensive, 2 assists, 1 block, 2 turnovers. You know, I think his impact is still always felt, especially when he gives the Nets that presence inside and also, you know, was able to do a little bit with the ball in his hands in terms of, like, you know, making shots.
Yeah, I want to see, like, because we've seen in actually games past really nice chemistry with Mikal Bridges and Nick Claxton. Like, Mikhail's fed him like 3 or 4 lobs. Like, let those two figure some stuff out, because I think those are our two greatest upside players. And look, Nick Claxton, I hope he's in net for a very, very long time. Mikal Bridges obviously tied with the nice contract for the Nets going forward. I want to see those two continue to work things out together, because Spencer Dinwiddie doesn't have great chemistry with bigs. I just think his timing and on lobs and whereas Mikal just seems to have this innate feel, and obviously everyone loves him, you know, his Instagram's on point and the team vibes, all of that sort of stuff. But I want to see that two-man game continue to flourish, and I want there to be plays run for them. Klax is really improving as a screener. He's rolling, he's ghost screening, all of the nuances that come with being a big man as an offensive player. You know, he's punishing mismatches, he's Eurostep, all these different little things. And Mikal Bridges is obviously growing as an offensive player too. Keep riding those two.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you saw even a little bit of those plays run. You saw some of those dribble handoffs. You saw some of those pick and rolls. There was one that was a disconnect that led to a turnover, but you're going to need more reps for them to become super successful. And I think there's a way that they can, you know, play off of each other and have success. And another guy who was right behind Nick Claxton tonight was Cam Johnson, finished with 23 points, 7 of 13 from the field, 3 of 7 from 3, 6 of 8 from the free throw line, 9 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal. And we actually saw him handle the basketball a lot more in this game than he has over the course of, you know, the rest of the road trip.
Yeah, and I liked it. You know, he's just let him have some opportunities, diversify your offense a little bit more, make it a bit more unpredictable. And I thought that was a credit to, you know, Jacques Vaughn letting Cam cook a little bit, you know, Cam Johnson cook a little bit. Yeah. So we've said Cam Thomas cook a little bit already in the past. But that just, and I think that that's going to open up new wrinkles and new little nuances to how the Nets can work going forward, because he's got a lot of talent. And it was nice to see him have like a bit of a mini breakout game, because you know, he's been decent enough and contributing pretty positively, but it's also nice to see him not get hit in the face.
Yeah, I thought this was just kind of more of an impact, and he was more involved in the offense, where the last couple games it just felt like he was not out there, but he just wasn't playing a bigger role. And I think, like you said, letting him handle the basketball just makes him feel more involved, and it also allows him to get a couple opportunities where he can just go downhill and get to the free throw line too. And he's a guy who had 8 free throw attempts tonight, and I think for a guy that's not super athletic, that's something that he's done pretty well in some occasions. You know, there's been other games where he's done a bad job of that, but tonight was an example of a good job.
Definitely. Any final game notes, Nick, overall, whether on the team or the players?
Not really. I think, you know, this is not a great loss, but you can look at the issues and see, you know, how they could have been corrected, and also how some of it was just shooting variance and, you know, your game plan not working out, and maybe the adjustments not necessarily being there. And one of your best players in Spencer Dinwiddie had one of his worst games, you know, this season. And that's going to typically lead to a loss given the talent of this team.
It's going to be about the response.
Exactly. But Jack, always a pleasure. Big thanks for listening. Check the Buzz on all streaming platforms.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.